The contents of today's call are protected by copyright and may not be reproduced without the prior written consent of Pason Systems, Inc. Please note, the advisory is located at the end of the press release issued by Pason Systems yesterday, which described forward-looking information. Certain information about the company that is discussed on today's call may constitute forward-looking information. Additional information about Pason Systems, including the risk factors relevant to the company, can be found in its annual information form. Ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Pason Systems, Inc. Third Quarter Results Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the speaker's presentation, there will be a question-and-answer session. To ask a question during the session, you will need to press star 1 on your telephone. Please be advised that today's conference is being recorded. If you require any further assistance, please press star 0. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Marcel Kessler, President and CEO. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning and welcome. With me here in Calgary today is John Faber, our Chief Financial Officer. I will start with the highlights of the third quarter. John will dive into the details of our financial performance. I will close with a brief perspective on the outlook for the industry and for Pason, and we will then take any questions. Pason's operating environment across North America has deteriorated in the third quarter. Industry activity in Canada remains at low levels and decreased a further 37% compared to the previous year. The situation in the United States is also challenging, with drilling activity down 14%, driven by the industry facing pressures from equity and debt investors to constrain spending within cash flows. These headwinds were partially offset by higher activity in Pason's international markets, market share increases in the United States, and continued growth in product penetration in all geographies, leading to higher revenue per EDR day. Driving the increase in revenue per EDR day were the higher adoption of data delivery and certain other peripheral products. The company generated revenue of $72.2 million in the period, a decrease of 12% compared to the same quarter last year, and essentially unchanged from the second quarter. Adjusted EBITDA was $31.6 million for the quarter, a decrease of 26% and up slightly from the second quarter. Pason recorded net income of $15.4 million compared to $24.4 million in the prior year and up from $9.2 million in the second quarter. At September 30th, our working capital position stood at $230 million, including cash and short-term investments of $181 million. We are maintaining our quarterly dividend at 19 cents per share. Before turning the call over to John for a more detailed look at the financials, I will make a few comments about the two recent investments Pason made. These two investments provide avenues for us to deploy our distinctive capabilities in two additional end markets. In September, we announced the acquisition of a majority interest of Energy Toolbase LLC, or ETB, a private U.S.-based software as a service company for $20 million U.S. dollars. ETB provides an industry-leading software package to model the economics and build proposals for solar and energy storage projects. The ETB product is utilized by a significant number of distributed energy project developers across the United States. Building on Pason's deep data management expertise, we are combining the capabilities of ETB and Pason Power. Over the last 2 years, Pason Power has been building a foundation in the solar and energy storage markets through its IEMS control system and Energy Data Hub products. With this investment, we are positioning ourselves for meaningful long-term growth in the solar and energy storage market. In October, we announced a $25 million investment to acquire a minority interest in Intelligent Well Health Solutions, or IWS. IWS is a privately owned oilfield technology and service company that provides unique surface control system for well completions and workover operations. Pason has been looking to enter the completion space for several years and IWS represents the first truly compelling opportunity we have seen, where we believe that we can build on our expertise in end-to-end data management and ruggedized field technologies. We are excited to play a role in IWS' continued growth. And I will now turn the call over to John.
Thank you, Marcel. As Marcel noted, industry conditions remained challenging in the third quarter of 2019, with activity levels down in both Canada and the United States. Industry activity was down 14% in the U.S. compared to the third quarter of 2018, and down 37% year-over-year in Canada. Against this backdrop, consolidated revenue decreased by 12% in the third quarter. In the United States, market share increased to 63%, and revenue per EDR day increased by 3% to $736 per day. In Canada, we saw revenue per EDR day increase 11% year-over-year to $1,325, while reported market share decreased to 81% in the quarter. Our international business unit reported a 5% increase in revenue for the quarter after accounting for a $1.7 million reduction to revenue as a result of applying hyperinflationary accounting to our results in Argentina. Consolidated revenue in the third quarter totaled $72.2 million and was essentially unchanged from the second quarter. Drilling data remains our largest revenue category, accounting for 52% of revenue. Growing demand for our data delivery products helps mitigate revenue declines from decreased industry activity in this category. Mud management and safety revenue represented 29% of revenue in the quarter. The revenue decrease in the category was less than the overall revenue decrease due to increased adoption of certain peripheral products during the quarter. Communications revenue contributed 7% of revenue in the quarter. Decreases in this category remain the largest among the revenue categories due to changes made to our pricing arrangements in 2019 as a result of adopting new, lower-cost technologies to provide service in the space. Drilling intelligence revenue accounted for 7% of third quarter revenue. Revenue in this category decreased as a result of the overall decrease in North American land drilling activity, with additional headwinds in the United States from rig type and customer mix changes in the quarter. Revenue in our analytics and other category contains product and service offerings, which are less closely correlated to drilling activity. As a result, revenue in this category decreased by only 2% year-over-year and represented 5% of total revenue. Adjusted EBITDA for the third quarter of $31.6 million was down 26% from the third quarter of 2018 and up 3% sequentially from the second quarter. On a year-to-date basis, adjusted EBITDA of $102.9 million is down 4% from the first 9 months of 2018, while revenue is up 1% to $227.2 million. Net income of $15.4 million for the third quarter, or 18 cents per share, was down 37% from the third quarter of 2018 and up 67% sequentially. Net income of $43.7 million, or 51 cents per share, for the first 9 months of the year was a 4% improvement from 2018 levels. Research and development and corporate services expenses were relatively unchanged on a sequential basis, while R&D expenses are up 13% year-over-year for the quarter, largely as a result of a shift towards more cloud-based IT infrastructure as we entered the fourth quarter of 2018. Capital expenditures for the first 9 months of 2019 totaled $18.6 million, up 21% from the same period of 2018. Third quarter CapEx of $4.1 million was 16% lower than 2018 levels. We continue to expect to spend up to $30 million on capital expenditures in 2019. Pason generated free cash flow of $33.1 million in the third quarter, up 23% from the third quarter of 2018 and up 2% sequentially, driven by a reduction in accounts receivable and lower capital spending. For the first 9 months of the year, free cash flow of $66 million was down $2.9 million from 2018. As a reminder, year-to-date free cash flow includes the negative impact of a $15.3 million payment related to our bilateral advanced pricing arrangement with the CRA and the IRS. We continue to carry an income tax recoverable of $15.3 million related to the offsetting refund due from the IRS once they have completed their reassessment of prior year tax returns. As Marcel noted, during the quarter, we deployed U.S. $20 million to acquire a majority interest in Energy Toolbase LLC. I will now turn to a brief review of the results for each of our business units. Our U.S. business unit revenue decreased 8% or 9% measured in U.S. dollars in the third quarter in the face of a 14% decrease in industry activity. Market share for the quarter of 63% was up both on a year-over-year basis and sequentially from the second quarter. Revenue per EDR day increased 3% year-over-year in the third quarter, in large part from increased adoption of data delivery products in our drilling data category and certain peripheral products in our mud management and safety category. For the first 9 months, U.S. revenue of $157.9 million is up 6% from 2018 levels. Operating costs increased 6% year-over-year in the U.S. and 12% on a year-to-date basis, reflecting our increased operational capacity in select operating regions. As a result, segment gross profit for the U.S. business unit decreased by 18% to $25.9 million in the third quarter. Gross profit for the 9 months ended September 30th of $84.8 million was up 1% over prior year results. The Canadian business unit managed to again outperform very challenging industry conditions in the third quarter. Pason's revenue for the quarter was 31% lower than 2018, while industry activity was down 37% for the same period. On a year-to-date basis, Pason's 23% revenue decrease compares to a 32% decrease in industry activity. In our second quarter conference call, we indicated that we expected the combination of low drilling activity levels and a greater proportion of cost-focused operators in the active customer mix to result in downward pressure on market share, while new product and service offerings would provide support to revenue per EDR day. Reported market share of 81% was down from 85% in the third quarter of 2018, while revenue per EDR day increased 11% in the third quarter and 8% on a year-to-date basis. With drilling activity expected to remain near historically low levels in the upcoming quarters, we expect market share will continue to be more volatile than in years past, owing to the proportionate impact of the gain or loss of any one rig. Sequentially, revenue increased 50%, reflecting the seasonality of Canadian drilling activity. Operating costs were down 12% in Canada in the third quarter and 19% on a year-to-date basis, largely as a result of reduced purchasing costs in our communications category. Segment gross profit for the Canadian business unit of $4.3 million was down 58% from the third quarter of 2018. For the first 9 months of the year, segment gross profit came in at $13 million. Our international business unit saw continued strong performance in the third quarter. Despite a $1.7 million negative impact to revenue as a result of applying hyperinflationary accounting to our Argentina operations, reported third quarter revenue of $8.5 million was up 5% from the third quarter of 2018. Sequentially, international business unit revenue was down $1.5 million as a result of the previously mentioned impact of hyperinflationary accounting. Segment gross profit in the international business unit of $2.9 million was largely unchanged from a year ago. Year-to-date gross profit from the international business unit stood at $9.3 million, up 78% from 2018 levels. In summary, Pason's third quarter results represent continued outperformance in the context of challenging industry conditions. We are defending our competitive position while seeking opportunities to grow revenue per EDR day through delivering enhanced functionality to our customers. We continue to prudently manage our costs with a view to sustaining our profitability without impairing our ability to fully participate when industry conditions improve. Our balance sheet remains strong. At September 30th, prior to the investment in Intelligent Wellhead Systems, we had $230 million of working capital, including $181 million of cash and no interest-bearing debt. We are returning cash to shareholders through our regular dividend and our normal course issuer bid program. Through the first 9 months of the year, we paid in aggregate $47 million in dividends, and we are maintaining our quarterly dividend at 19 cents per share. We deployed a further $13 million in the first 9 months toward our normal course issuer bid, more than offsetting the effects of dilution from stock option exercises in the trailing 12-month period. And I will now turn the call back to Marcel for his comments on our outlook.
Thank you, John. With drilling activity levels declining and operators maintaining discipline about spending levels, visibility remains quite poor with respect to operator budgets as we move into 2020. There is a chance that rig counts will bottom in the fourth quarter, but they may stay low for some time. However, we believe that there are good reasons for optimism regarding drilling activity in the medium term. Demand for oil continues to increase each year. Consumption of oil-based products has gone from 75 million barrels per day in 1999 to over 100 million barrels per day this year. The industry needs to add more than 1 million barrels per day of new supply each year. The world relies on hydrocarbons, and there's nothing on the horizon that can replace it. Fears that the trade war between the U.S. and China will significantly reduce oil demand seem overblown, and the International Energy Agency has reduced their oil demand forecast by only 100,000 barrels per day. It is not possible for U.S. oil production to keep increasing or even stay flat if drilling activity is low and dropping. Oil prices need to go higher at some point to avoid a supply shortage, and drilling activity will follow. In this environment, we are keeping our fixed costs low and maintaining flexibility for our go-forward plans, which gives us the means and confidence to address any activity scenario. We do not plan to reduce our R&D efforts. Our capital expenditures will be relatively modest going forward, with a large portion of development efforts focused on software. We expect capital spending levels to be up to $25 million in 2020. Our highly capable and flexible IT and communications platform can host additional new Payson and third-party software at the rig site and in the cloud. Our market positions remain strong, and we expect to be able to deliver growth in our international markets and through higher product adoption going forward. Finally, we wanted to highlight that the timing of the two recent investments close to each other was coincidental. We had been investigating opportunities to make an investment in the completion space, as well as to accelerate our efforts in the solar and energy storage market for some time. There are no additional investments planned in the short term in either area. However, we will continue to scan the drilling, completions, and power markets for attractive long-term growth opportunities. We will now be happy to take any questions.
If you'd like to ask a question at this time, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. First question comes from Greg Coleman with National Bank Financial.
Hey, thanks for taking my questions.
Morning, Greg.
Good morning. Hi, Greg. I just wanted to start by talking a little bit about the outlook. Marcel, I would agree entirely that in the medium term, the rig count trajectory and oil production trajectory are mutually unsustainable in the medium term. But in the short term, our view is that the role of the U.S. rig count is likely to continue, and your guidance looking into at least early 2020 would be cautious as well. I'd like to talk about your cost structure in the current environment versus previous environments when we've seen your revenue roll. Is there any reason that if 2020 should be a down year from a revenue perspective, that there's overall change in the way EBITDA margins react in this cycle versus previous, given the changes in your cost structure, operational efficiencies, and adoption of some complementary products?
Greg, I'll actually let John take that question.
Sure. Hi, Greg. I think if you look back a few years when we came into the downturn, late 2014 into 2015, as you know, we made a number of changes to the cost structure, reduced a number of fixed costs, made some other costs more variable. We've done a very good job, I think, since then, not bringing a lot of those costs back. So I think our cost structure we feel quite comfortable with today. And Marcel indicated we certainly wouldn't anticipate making any reductions on the R&D side. On the operational side, I think it's very important for us to maintain our capacity to respond as things get better into the medium term. So we tend to look at this with more of a 2-year to 3-year outlook on where we think activity may go rather than a response to the 1-year expectations. And I think our cost structure is quite appropriate today. So if revenue were to go down into 2020 as a result of activity slowing, I think you would see some more compression on the EBITDA margin side. As a result of that, I just don't think we'll be as responsive on the cost side.
Got it. So the EBITDA margin compression we've seen in the past would be indicative of what we would see if revenue was to roll. There's no reason for it to be materially different in sort of this cycle than what we've seen in previous downturns.
That would be correct.
Got it. Just keeping on, unfortunately, sort of negative view topic here, if industry activities do deteriorate, say more significantly than anyone's looking in 2020, would you be comfortable using your cash balance to temporarily support the dividend throughout periods of negative free cash flow, say 1, 2, 3 quarters? Or would you look to defend the balance sheet and in periods of negative free cash flow look to change the dividend policy?
No, I think the short answer is yes, we would look to defend the dividend.
Got it. And then just moving on to international markets, a little bit more positive note, you mentioned that as a bit of a lone bright spot in Q3. Would you expect that to continue based on the visibility you see on those customers, which just based on their location are a little bit tougher for us to look into, even given the challenging sort of commodity environment at the moment? Is double-digit top-line growth for international segment unrealistic, or is it within reach?
I don't think it's realistic looking forward, especially given the importance of Argentina in our international portfolio. The recent elections in Argentina have created some uncertainty and probably negative pressure on drilling activity there in the short term. So I do not expect to continue the growth that we have seen here over the last year or two.
Got it. Okay, thanks for that color. That's it for me. Thanks again.
Okay, thanks, Greg.
Next question comes from Dane Billock with CIBC Capital Markets.
Morning, Marcel. Morning, John.
Morning, Dane.
Morning, Dane.
So nice to see some market share gains in the U.S. Was that a function of an incremental customer win, or was it largely just core clients remaining more active through the quarter?
It was a mix of both. I think increased penetration with one of our largest customers and activity levels between operators, but slightly tilting in our favor, both played a role.
Okay, gotcha. And maybe just staying on the U.S. and kind of related, I mean, small decline in revenue per EDR day sequentially. Could you maybe just elaborate on the moving pieces behind that?
So with the revenue per EDR day, there's a couple things at play. Anytime we get into a slowdown in the overall industry, customers become a little bit more cautious and look for opportunities to reduce costs where they can. And so that would have resulted in slightly lower adoption on some of the peripheral products. And then to your earlier question around kind of just the mix of active customers, there are certain customers where the revenue opportunities are different based on the profile of their rigs or profiles of arrangements we might have with them on technology arrangements, et cetera. So sometimes those customers that are active, the revenue opportunity isn't quite the same, and that can put some pressure on revenue per EDR day as well if a customer that we accrue a little bit less revenue is more active.
Gotcha. Okay, that's very helpful. And again, just it's with those customers that are maybe dropping some of the peripheral products, it's more of a function of them just trying to save costs and not them taking maybe a competitor's and bolting it on or anything like that, correct?
Correct, because if it was a customer going to a competitor, that would show up as market share. So it's a case of reducing some of the peripherals when it shows up in revenue per EDR day.
Perfect. Okay. Moving on internationally, can you give us a bit of an update specific to the Australian market and outlook for 2020? I mean, obviously, it's been one of your guys' stronger areas, but any expectations for that to be a more moderate growth rate going forward, whether that be activity on a product adoption side?
Yeah, based on what we see today, we expect the Australian market and our activity there to stay at the current high levels and to be able to maintain the currently high margins. But I don't think we'll see the steep growth trajectory we have seen over the last couple of years.
Okay. Understood. That's helpful. All my other questions have been answered, so that's all I had. Appreciate the color, guys. I'll turn it back.
Hey, thanks, Dane.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. And we have a question from Ian Gillies with GMP.
Morning, guys.
Morning, Ian.
The changes in rig count by basin have obviously been quite differentiated. Can you maybe provide a bit of an update of where you're at or where you may be stronger in certain basins rather than other basins, just because that's the other part that's always going to be obviously play a big part in market share as we go through year end?
Good question. I'm going to focus primarily on the U.S. in my comments here, Ian. So,
yeah, and sorry, I was going to say specifically to the U.S. My bad.
Yeah, right. So, yes, the activity declines in the U.S. across basins has been highly uneven. I think leading the losses has been the Mid-Continent, so the Oklahoma area. The Bakken wasn't great either. There were some declines on the Permian, but much less than the rest of the U.S. And this actually aligns quite nicely with our area of strength and market share. So the Mid-Con has long been one of our weaker areas, so the relative declines there have been hurting us less, so to speak. And the Permian capability and market share has been above average, at least in more recent times. So this has really, it's been in our favor a bit.
If I go back in history, and this number may be dated, I remember there was a ratio of field employees per rigs you like to have, whether it be in Canada or in the U.S. I believe it was for every three rigs you wanted one field employee. Has that metric changed at all over the course of time with pad development, or have you seen any changes there that help the cost structure per se?
So I think that ratio would never have been 3-1. I think it was always closer, at least as a target, as 8-10-1.
Okay.
So one field tech taking care of 8-10 rigs. It has not fundamentally changed with the move from to pads. But there is quite a bit of variability across different basins given how quickly activity levels have changed.
Okay. And with respect to the acquisitions that were made, I'm going to work under the assumption that you see a number of opportunities given the strength of the balance sheet. Was there something different about these opportunities if they are scaled to a certain size that provides a certain financial benefit relative to some other opportunities you may see? Or I guess what was the difference with these acquisitions once commerciality may be reached or more scale?
So the key factor for us when considering acquisitions has always been our conviction that we are able to add value to the assets we acquire. And so talking about the completion space first, we have been looking to enter certain aspects of the completion space around data management for several years. We never really found the compelling asset or business where we thought, no, we really understand what they're trying to do. We really understand how we could help them. IWS was the first thing we really saw that was compelling, and we felt, no, there's really something around the end-to-end data management aspect of this, as well as our expertise in designing, deploying, and servicing ruggedized field technology. And to your question, where we could really see that it could be material in terms of the overall magnitude of the opportunity a few years out. So if we achieve some kind of penetration of the active completions fracking fleet with that service, it can be material to Pason in the medium to longer term. Similarly, on Pason Power, right, it's obviously a longer-term play. It's a broader step out. The lens here around we have to be convinced that based on our experience, our expertise, we can add value. That was still crucial. And we felt that the combination of ETB and Pason Power really felt quite unique in terms of what it can achieve together. Now, I don't want to create any expectations around the contribution here in 2020 or 21. It is a longer-term play. But the hurdle and the lens has always been our ability to add value to what we buy. And then, obviously, the magnitude of the opportunity in the medium term has to be substantial.
That's very helpful. That's it for me. I'll turn the call back over. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ian.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. And we have a question from Vincent Lavoya with Journey 103 News. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, Vincent.
Morning, Vincent.
I have three questions for you. The first one is, how could the Alberta's budget affect your business in the near future?
I think when you look at the budget, there's obviously a lot of things in there. The one area that specifically probably has an impact to PACE on, just given we have a fairly reasonable sized R&D presence, is some of the changes that they would have made to the SR&ED credits, the scientific research and development credits, which that going away would have a little bit of a negative impact to us on a cash taxes basis, but that's probably the only one that I would call out as having a specific impact to us. And again, that's just given a bit more of our technology angle.
But overall, nothing material.
Nothing material.
Nothing material.
Yep.
And my second question is, how do you feel towards companies like Houston Oil and Gas going out of business in Alberta?
I didn't catch the question.
The question was, how do we feel about smaller companies going out of business in Alberta? And I think we, like all Albertans and all Canadians, right, it's challenging to see any company, customer, have a tough time in this environment. So.
Okay. And if 2020 is going to be a down year revenue-wise for your company, what measures would your company use to encounter such financial issues?
Vincent, again, I'd sort of turn back to a question we were asked a couple of questioners ago around our costs tend to be somewhat fixed, and we tend to take a medium-term to view on these things. And so I think the implications for us if revenue was down is that earnings would be down, but that we wouldn't be quite as responsive in terms of the cost side.
Okay, that's all I've got. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you, Vincent.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone. Once again, that's star 1 to ask a question. And we do not have any phone questions at this time. I will turn the call over to the presenters.
Well, thank you, everybody. Have a great day.
Okay. This concludes today's conference call. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.